ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing that you can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Lauren Berger, Program Associate at Brighter Green, a public policy action think tank that works to raise awareness on issues that span the environment, animals, and sustainability. That's coming up next on ACT Radio, but first some news.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports that the Sky Islands in Arizona are threatened by sweeping rollbacks of environmental protections in 1.8 million acres of the Coronado National Forest. The U.S. Forest Service released a draft management plan that would eliminate long-standing protections for Arizona's wildlife, rivers, and streams on the Coronado National Forest. The revised plan will dictate which activities, from recreation to logging and mining to designating areas for protection, are allowed on every acre of the forest for years to come. In addition to slashing protections for species like threatened Mexican spotted owls, the plan also severely reduces or eliminates restrictions on damaging activities like logging, mining, road construction, and other industrial uses of the forest. The plan would harm rare streams, rivers, and wetlands, including the biologically precious San Pedro and Gila rivers. The Coronado's beautiful and rare waterways are used by many people in nearby cities like Tucson, El Paso, and Phoenix for recreational activities like hiking and camping, and are also critical for rare and threatened birds, fishes, mammals, and even the endangered jaguar. Because of legal action by the Center for Biological Diversity, the Forest Service was compelled in 1996 to amend forest plans in all 11 national forests in Arizona and New Mexico, including the Coronado, to include protective standards for spotted owls based on scientific findings, including a biological opinion by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that unrestricted logging in owl habitat would jeopardize the species' survival. For more information, including on how to submit your comments on the draft management plan, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org.
Norway has been a leader in efforts to stem CO2 emissions worldwide and has supported implementation of measures to aid developing countries in achieving UN goals of reducing greenhouse gases. To Norwegians, the health of our planet is a serious matter. To prove just how serious Norway is about global warming, a spokesman for Norway's military announced last Tuesday that the Norwegian armed forces were being put on a vegetarian diet once a week. Known as Meatless Mondays, it's Norway's effort to fight global warming. The news media was assured that this is not an effort to save money, but rather to save the earth by cutting the consumption of ecologically unfriendly foods. The new diet is already in place at one of the military's main bases and will soon be in place with all units at home and overseas. It's estimated that meat consumption will be cut by about 150 tons annually. It was through the efforts of a Norwegian environmental group known as The Future is in Our Hands that has been campaigning for Meatless Mondays nationwide that the military is observing Meatless Mondays. Livestock farming worldwide accounts for a large percentage of all greenhouse gas emissions, so Norway is working at chipping away at their part of the problem. There may be another positive outcome for Norwegians eating less meat each week. U.S. physician Dr. Caldwell Esselstein, a proponent of the vegetarian diet, cites an incident that occurred in Norway during World War II. The occupying German army took away all the people's livestock, leaving them to eat vegetables, and an unforeseen result of this action was a sharp reduction in heart disease and stroke in the population. The Norwegian military is setting a good example. Let's hope this idea spreads.
Now if they would just stop wailing.
Yeah, there's that.
From the Associated Press, Macy's is moving rocker Joan Jett and her band off the South Dakota tourism float in its Thanksgiving Day parade after ranchers complained about having a vegetarian and animal rights advocate representing their state. Orlando Veras, Macy's parade spokesman, told the Associated Press that a new performer for the South Dakota float will be announced later. Veras said that the annual parade in New York City is about entertainment, not advocacy, and that Macy's was making the change to prevent any further distraction from our entertainment mission. Some South Dakota farmers and ranchers voiced concern about the choice to put Jett on the float because she is a supporter of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which promotes a vegetarian diet and criticizes livestock production practices. South Dakota Cattlemen's Association President Corey Ike, who farms and ranches near Canova in eastern South Dakota, said that he thinks it was a mistake to select Jett because her beliefs don't mesh with the state. He said, coming from such a rural state where livestock is such a part of our life, we didn't think it was appropriate. Dan Matthews, PETA's senior vice president, said that he's happy with the publicity generated by the controversy. Matthews said, thanks to South Dakota's reactionary ranchers, people across the country have learned why Jett supports PETA. The meat trade can't stand any scrutiny of its cruelty, he said. South Dakota Tourism Secretary Jim Hagan has said that many people mistakenly assume state officials selected Jett to appear on the float. None of the artists the state proposed were available or willing to appear in the parade, so Macy's selected Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. The South Dakota Float, which has appeared each year since 2010, features Mount Rushmore, the Badlands, the Black Hills, and this year, a black eye.
Stick around. Coming up next, we feature a conversation with Lauren Berger of Brighter Green. That's next on ACT Radio.
Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Lauren Berger. Thanks for being with us, Lauren.
Thanks for having me.
Lauren, can we start out by having you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got involved in vegetarianism?
Sure. Well, I became a vegetarian when I was about 12 years old. More of just, it was something that I wanted to do. I wasn't hugely involved in animal rights, but it was just something I was interested in. I didn't grow up eating a lot of meat, and that's kind of something that I just started to do, and then I became a very strict vegetarian for a while, and I've been a vegetarian ever since. And now that I work at Brighter Green, I would say I'm still vegetarian, but I have mostly vegan meals.
Was it difficult at 12 years old? Did your family give you problems?
Yes and no. My mother is Chinese, so I grew up eating a lot of tofu, a lot of vegetables, so my meals were mostly, you know, Chinese meals, so it really wasn't very hard in that respect. It was hard going out to eat. My grandmother still jokes with me, or doesn't joke with me even now. She says, oh, we go out to eat, you don't eat anything. I, you know, my aunt had been a vegetarian for many, many years, so she really understands. But I think overall I probably had it better than most.
Yeah.
People in the Midwest.
and you're in New York now, right?
I'm in New York, yes.
Oh, so no shortage of options for eating there.
Right. Yeah, New York is a great place to be vegetarian and vegan. There are, I would say, a lot of vegan restaurants are popping up, and it's not just people who are vegan who are going to them. It's really people who are interested in vegan cuisine or just interested in kind of not eating meat for health reasons.
For health reasons, do you think this is a growing trend?
I would say yes, but I would say that is based on my experience in New York. I would say that most definitely I have met over the last few years families that do not feed their children a lot of meat. I wouldn't say that they're entirely vegetarian families, but you know, their kids are not eating meat every single day. Maybe they'll go out to eat meat. So I think there's definitely, I would say in my world, a lot of people who are eating less meat. Would I say that it's a trend globally? No, not at all.
Oh, no.
And would I say is it a trend nationally? I would say probably not. I would say it depends on the city, and it depends on where in America you are.
And you work for Brighter Green. It's an organization that's devoted to tracking international issues as it relates to animals and climate change. And tell us a little bit more about Brighter Green.
So Brighter Green is a public policy action tank that works to raise awareness of and encourage policy action on issues that span the environment, animals, and sustainability. Most of that is around the global effects of industrial animal agriculture, so factory farming, livestock production, mostly in the global south. So we're not necessarily focusing so much on what's happening in America, because a lot of that is already covered. We're focusing more on what's happening in places like China, India, parts of Africa, and South America.
It's really unfortunate what's happening in some of those countries. I understand that China now consumes more meat than the United States.
Yes, they consume twice as much meat as us, and which is huge. I mean, and we consume a lot of meat in this country.
China's the most populous country right now.
Exactly, exactly. That's what our new documentary film, What's for Dinner, really talks about. And it's a big issue because it's not just that people are eating more meat. It's how is this affecting the environment? How is this affecting people's health? And that's something that we've been focusing on and have been, you know, we've done a lot of work in China because it is such a huge country and it has such influence because it's, you know, a rising superpower.
So what kind of work have you been doing? Mainly education work to let the public know about shifting to this Western diet that's so meat-based, how bad it is for their the environment and their health? Or is it policy or education or a combination?
We're mostly a policy organization. So we have policy papers, which you can view on our website. We have a China policy paper. We have one in India. We have one in Ethiopia. And we have one in Brazil. So that was kind of the basis of our work. But we also have videos that are associated with each of our policy papers. What's for Dinner is a 30-minute documentary film that we try and screen in universities across the nation, internationally. So it's mostly, it is an element of outreach, but we don't really necessarily do education. It's more policy work with also other organizations that are kind of interested in these issues. We go to, you know, the UNFCCC, COPs. We try to work with those every single year. We do some sort of education, but it's mostly policy work.
The film, What's for Dinner, it's in English?
It's in Chinese, it's in Mandarin, and in some certain regional dialects, but it has English subtitles.
Okay.
And how's the response been so far to the documentary?
It has been great. You know, we're still in the early stages of it, so we're trying to get people to view it. But we've had a few screenings, as I said, internationally and universities, and people have really responded well to it because I think we don't necessarily talk about these issues, and we aren't necessarily talking about how the Western diet is affecting what's happening in developing nations. And it's not just health; they're taking these models from us, and it's not something that we should be proud of because it's doing extreme damage to our environment as well as to ourselves.
I would think you'd have greater success in some of these developing countries that are just taking on the Western diet because, you know, like you say, it's already sort of ingrained in our culture here. But I mean, do you think there's greater hope for being able to change these eating habits in other countries as opposed to trying to focus on the U.S.?
That's a tough question because something that we've kind of seen is a lot of developing nations want to model after America and the West because it's seen as prosperity. So they associate prosperity with eating meat, more meat. It's seen as, and that's something in our film, you know, they say, well, you know, after the economic reform, people don't want to go back to not eating a lot of meat because it's a sign of not doing as well. And if you eat a KFC, if you eat at McDonald's, it's a sign of kind of status.
Right.
So I think it's hard. In some ways, you would think it would be easier because these are traditionally countries that do not have a lot of, they do not traditionally eat a lot of meat or dairy. But now they want to be what they see, you know, they want to be like Americans or Westerners or Europeans. And this is how they associate it. It's a very easy way to associate it.
You mean obese and have the highest rates of coronary
disease?
Die young.
I think that part doesn't necessarily come across. I mean, in some of our research recently, we have done a few blog series around kind of increase of the Western diet in certain countries, and there was I think it was either a KFC or a McDonald's ad that aired in China, and it had Jeremy Lin in it. And you know the implication was you have this, you know, 6 foot something Chinese American who is really successful, he comes across as like being this, you know, amazing Chinese American man. So the association is, if you eat KFC, you'll be just like Jeremy Lin.
Well, maybe so with the growth hormones.
Exactly. So it's hard. It's hard. You would think it would be easier, but it's actually it's much more complicated.
So we should try to create some videos of MTV Cribs and Robin Leach lifestyles of the rich and famous, just with people eating vegetables in
them. Exactly.
Something I saw on your website, it mentions the correlation between women's rights and climate change. Can you explain that for us?
Sure. So I originally got involved in Brighter Green, working on their East African Girls Leadership Initiative, which is a program that educates Maasai girls from Kenya and Tanzania. Maasai is an indigenous group in Africa. And it's about educating them not just so they become leaders of their community, but, you know, advocates for indigenous people as well as, you know, climate change in their communities and in the global sector. So climate change has an extreme effect on these pastoralist indigenous communities because, you know, their whole livelihood is based on the land. They're not living in cities. They're not living in towns. You know, their currency is their cattle. And with things like desertification and droughts increasing because of climate change and then floods, you know, their livelihoods are completely compromised. So there's a very strong correlation between climate change and human rights. Now, with women's rights, another issue that comes across is, well, in the Maasai community, women are responsible for building, you know, their houses. So they, you know, if they don't have materials, they have to, you know, travel a farther distance. You know, they are, I don't want to say they're becoming victims of climate change, but they are. They can't live the way that they have been able to for hundreds of years.
I guess one of the things that I took away from some of the international human rights classes I took in law school was about how when you really empower the women in the family, how much better the family did in terms of managing money, about, you know, population growth and control over when and how they had kids, and also how they ate and how they survived as a family.
Yes, completely. And that's something that, you know, traditionally in the Maasai community, it's an accomplishment for girls to finish high school. And the students in our program, and it is a pilot program, it's not very large, but it's a pilot program, you know, they're now in university, which is a big deal, and it's a big deal for their communities, you know, because now they can become leaders, and they can have a say in what goes on in their community, which can, you know, mean, okay, let's not cut down these trees for charcoal, because this is wreaking havoc on our environment, and it's ultimately going to negatively affect us. Or, you know, let's educate our children. Let's make sure that these issues that are affecting us are, you know, represented in our government.
Well, I have a question for you about sustainability. Do you think that given the tremendous population of the Earth and how many people there are, can we really have sustainable meat eating on this planet?
No.
What about even sustainable vegetarianism? Because, again, that requires a tremendous amount of resources for egg production, milk production, cheese production. And, you know, a lot of people, they get confused and they hear about, oh, sustainability. Well, I can do this activity because it's sustainable, because I got it from a small local place, or I got it from,
right,
it's only organically grown. But given the just the sheer mass of humans on the planet, it just seems hard for me when we talk about sustainability. I don't see how these activities could be sustainable.
Right, and they aren't. And I think something that we have, you know, one of the reasons why Brighter Green was founded is that, you know, people have been talking about sustainability for a while, but not a lot of people are talking about how meat consumption and, you know, animal products are not sustainable. And what they're doing. I don't have the answer, but I think decreasing meat consumption, decreasing consumption of animal products is going to help. But that's not the entire answer. It's also, you know, influencing governments, influencing you know, companies that, you know, continue to do this and continue to have practices that are extremely harmful and without any kind of recourse at all.
Well, yeah, and you always hear about, oh, we're going to have a sustainable tuna fishery or something like this. And you're thinking with the demand for tuna from the sushi trend and all of this, it just seems like it's impossible to have a sustainable tuna harvest. But you see it advertised all the time by, you know, different countries. Oh, we're going to implement in the Mediterranean sustainable tuna fishing.
Right. I think also consumers, it's not that they, well, I think part of it is that they don't necessarily want to know kind of what goes into things, how where they get their food, but they think because, oh, it's organic, or, oh, I got it from the farmer's market or the co-op, that therefore it's okay. And they kind of don't go beyond that and thinking about, well, actually when you eat, you know, a lot of cheese and what goes into that, just because it's organic and it says that it doesn't have, you know, hormones, well, you're still producing a lot of waste from it.
You know, I think one of the main things that brought me to, you know, away from a meat-based diet was learning about deforestation in Brazil, for instance. And, you know, as a younger, I remember seeing videos and stats about how they're clear-cutting forests. And in my head, I would think, oh, well, this is, you know, for trees. And then later on came to learn that they're clearing the trees and the land for raising cattle. I think Brazil is a good example of that. And also with the use of, I was reading a blog about yours about how they're the soybean fields. Can you tell us more about that correlation between meat and deforestation?
Sure. So Brazil is, you know, a really good example because that's where a lot of it is happening. And we actually, Brighter Green is working with Global Forest Coalition on a project particularly about this issue of animal agriculture and deforestation because it's something that isn't really talked about because a lot of people are talking about, oh, we need to stop deforestation in Brazil, but they don't really talk about how soybean farming or livestock, production of livestock is affecting this. So the issue is, historically, you know, there's cattle ranching in a place like Brazil. So people, you know, because there's such high demand for soybean, not just for, you know, tofu, but they use soybean meal for feed for animals. So as we increase our meat consumption, we increase these factory farms to meet the demand for meat, we have to increase the feed that we give to animals so that they can become bigger and that they can be, you know, be eaten. And with that comes deforestation in Brazil, just of their Amazon, completely deforest it, and then they produce soybeans on it, and there hasn't been a lot of regulation around it. Now, recently, there was a moratorium on kind of soybean production there, but we still found out, if you read in the blog post, that Monsanto and all these soybean productions are just using land that cattle ranchers have deforested to produce more soybean. So it's actually, the deforestation still continues, and it's going to still continue.
I remember back in when I was in college or graduate school hearing, you know, like a hamburger from McDonald's takes up this amount of rainforest in Brazil. I mean, do you think people get desensitized to those facts? And like you said, they just don't want to hear it anymore. They know that they're contributing to this on some level, but I guess their desire to eat certain products overcomes that. And how can policies get around these behavioral choices? That's one of my questions I have. How can we use policy to move around these really ingrained behaviors?
I think there's two parts to what you're saying. I think it's very easy for people to say, oh, well, McDonald's, that's McDonald's meat production, so I won't eat McDonald's.
I'll go to Burger King instead.
Yeah, or yeah, exactly. Or, you know, but, you know, my meat is sustainably farmed and, you know, oh, mine's organic and I got it from, you know, Trader Joe's where they say, you know, I don't want to, like, implicate Trader Joe's, but, you know, anywhere where they may say, well, it's not, you know, the fast food meat. I think there is a dissociation with that. There is this idea that, well, if it's not from, you know, a chain, it's still okay because I got it from what I think is, you know, a farmer, a sustainable farmer. In terms of policy, I really think it comes down to influencing governments and influencing people who are making the decisions around environmental issues related to the increase of meat consumption and livestock production, as well as public health, because it's hard to say to people you can't eat meat. I mean, it's like, as a colleague of mine said, it's like saying we're going to take away your guns. Like you can't do that. It's very hard.
Not in Texas.
Yeah.
So can't say them both at the same time for sure.
Exactly.
I think the right to eat meat is written in the Constitution, isn't it?
Right. But where you can influence people, and I think also from an animal welfare perspective, there's a big disconnect between the dog that I have as my pet and the meat that I put on my plate. There's not really, you know, because people say, oh, I'll never eat dog because, you know, I love my dog. But they'll eat beef, they'll eat chicken. You know, it's very hard to put those two together. And I think it's, you know, especially if that's what you've been grown up eating, you don't necessarily say, oh, well, how is that any different? But I think the way to influence people in a much larger perspective is the, you know, the government action around kind of environmental issues, but around also public health, because there is increasing evidence around the negative effects of eating a lot of meat. And, you know, we know it's associated with, you know, cardiovascular disease, diabetes. And, you know, people are, I think, are more willing to accept, oh, I shouldn't eat this because it's going to make me sick, than I shouldn't eat this because it's bad for the environment. I shouldn't eat this because it's an animal welfare issue. I think that's more of the intersection, both governmentally and also in terms of getting this image into people's heads that this is going to affect you in a negative way.
Lauren, can you tell us where our listeners can go to learn more about the public policy work that Brighter Green is doing?
Sure. So our website is Brighter Green, www.brightergreen.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, which is just Brighter Green, and on Twitter, it's Brighter Green New York. And you'll see on our website, we have blogs, we have policy papers, we have policy briefs as well, if you don't want to read the whole policy paper, as well as videos. Also, if you want any information on What's for Dinner, we have a completely different What's for Dinner website, which is www.wfdinner.com.
We've been talking with Lauren Berger, Program Associate at Brighter Green. Thanks for being with us, Lauren.
Thanks.
If seeing free birds didn't convince your friends and family not to eat turkey this Thanksgiving, here are a few reasons why people should spare turkeys. Like cats and dogs, turkeys are intelligent and sensitive animals who form strong social bonds and show great affection to others. They even like having their feathers pet and gobbling along to music, like Joan Jett. Turkeys have excellent geography skills and can learn the specific details of an area of more than 1,000 acres. But on factory farms, they frequently have their beaks and toes cut off without anesthesia. And to prevent them from injuring one another is they are crowded by the thousands into dark, filthy warehouses. Turkeys, along with other birds, are not protected by the Federal Humane Slaughter Act and are frequently killed without first being stunned. And contrary to popular belief, turkeys are not a healthy option as their flesh is high in fat and cholesterol. So have a compassionate Thanksgiving this year and help sanctuaries like Farm Sanctuary and adopt a turkey. Don't eat one.
If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org. Coming up on Sunday, December the 8th, we're having a holidays party at Opus World Bistro. So please join us.
The party's open to members and potential members, so if you're interested in finding out more information or registering for this party, you do need to reserve in advance, and reservations are taken at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.